Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, good sunny Friday afternoon. Thanks for joining us on Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here with us this afternoon. Well, it's October. It's my favorite month of the year. What about you, Ryan? Is this your favorite month? Probably not.
You're right. I like the freshness. I like the crispness very much.
Yes.
But I guess I'm just a gloomy person because I know what comes after.
Yes, I know. I try not to think of that. I try not to think of November, but only October. We get these beautiful days. They're bright and sunny.
Yes.
We see all those great colors. And then, yes, then the bottom drops out. So let's just focus on at least the first week of October.
Yes, I like that.
Which is splendid. But it does get me thinking. I did book our spring break trip already thinking about when it gets to be winter here in the Midwest that you just want to escape. And sometimes you kind of want to escape when you're thinking about just where you live in general. You don't really want to settle down. You're thinking about what's next. You're thinking about what you can do next. Sometimes maybe you're praying about what God wants you to do next. Maybe you've fantasized about traveling to the other side of the world, telling the good news of Jesus Christ, and you think that that would just be a great life. Maybe you ask God questions like, where are you calling me to go and what are you calling me to do? Well, those are all very standard questions. But what if God's answer is, well, I want you to stay right where you are and continue to do exactly what you're doing, but maybe in a different way? That would be a challenging answer. So what we're going to do is we're going to chat with someone today who's explored this question in depth and is just having a great time sharing and kind of opening our minds to the possibility of what if staying was the new going. Instead of going out into the world, you are staying where you're planted and really settling down and digging down some roots. So let me introduce you to what he's written, which is called Staying is the New Going, Choosing to Love Where God Places You. And the author is Alan Briggs. He's the director of Frontline Church Planting, which is a network of churches and an equipping hub in Colorado. He is also the multiplying pastor. I love that title. He's the multiplying pastor.
Very gifted in mathematics.
Absolutely. I think that my 10-year-old actually would like that job until he figured out what it was, and then he'd say no. But he likes to multiply. So he's the multiplying pastor. I'm guessing that means multiplying either disciples, churches. We will find out. At Vanguard Church, where he makes disciples, trains leaders to multiply. His speaking and writing focus on equipping the saints for effective ministry inside and outside the family of God. He and his wife, Julie, have 4 kids. 2 are adopted, 2 are biological. He loves the church and is passionate about equipping leaders and churches to multiply disciples, leaders, and more churches. So it's all of those things. Connect with him at alanbriggs.net, and we'll have more information about that on our website. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Do you get a lot of jokes about being the multiplying pastor?
Yes, you know, I'm terrible at math, and so most of the jokes are from my family who saw my report cards growing up and said, maybe my credit cards would bring jokes too with adding. So I can't even add, let alone multiply. But yeah, I get to work with disciples, leaders, and new church plants, starting more churches. So it is a blast, even if I can't multiply.
Well, that sounds like there's an infinite number of possibilities with what you do as well. So love that. So this book that you've written that's called Staying is the New Going, it kind of introduces a new concept to what you normally would hear when you're kind of learning what it means to be a Christ follower and you're supposed to go out into all the world. But that verse also has some, well, the world might be underneath your feet as well. And sometimes we skip that part, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so much to that, and really in the original language, you could read it more as you go. And so as you go throughout the course of your day, throughout the course of soccer practice, and I've got 4 kids, and so the amount of people in a day that we see and we touch just on a normal day with our kids, just following our kids around town, is unbelievable. And the amount of times you'll see the exact same people in your life. And it has been certainly a shift for us to think about, what if instead of dreaming about doing great things somewhere else, we just focused on doing small, very faithful things right where we're at. So it has been a bit of a shift for our family, and I talk about that in the book.
So what has been, well, I guess the first question is, what originally kind of attracted you to this? What's your story with maybe landing in a community and coming up with this concept that, hey, wait, maybe we're supposed to stay here for a while?
Yeah, we moved into a neighborhood that we really had no idea about. We'd just been through just some pretty serious family stuff. We'd come off of adoption of two kids, and anybody who's done that knows that you're disoriented for quite a while and trying to figure out what is the new norm in life, and everybody's busy and all of that, and really moved into this neighborhood and began to see the disconnection. And I now describe it as the cracks in the neighborhood, and we began to see loneliness. We began to see people who connected a lot back in the day and had a lot of stories and shared life, but don't connect anymore. And we realized that something was strangely normal about it, yet this isn't okay. And so we began to see this desire people have for community. And obviously, as a pastor, so much of the time I'm challenging people out of the doors and figuring out ways our church can be effective outside of the doors. And I went, wow, this is it right here. This is our mission field. And it's been beautiful and fun and mundane and everything else that's fallen in place since that day when God really shifted me and just brought me in the shift of, I've put you here for a reason. You're not supposed to go over there for a reason. This is over there, and you better start getting busy.
Mm. Well, it seems like neighborhoods themselves are set up a little differently from when they were, at least from when I was a child, that you did kind of walk by other people's houses to get to your friend's house, or you would join people for a block party or some. I was telling you earlier, I'm from Minnesota, so it would be a potluck. But you would join and gather, and you'd join at your church. You might join on the corner. And those things don't seem to happen today like they did then. What has happened in our society that's kind of discouraged that type of interaction?
Yeah, I think certainly we've experienced the death of the front porch in America and kind of the death of the front sidewalk. And you walk past people and you kind of give the typical, maybe you grunt at somebody, maybe you give the small wave, but you certainly don't ask a personal question or go a little bit deeper. And so there are some obstacles with that. And so I think some of those are just, we're skeptical of people. I think stranger danger has never been higher than it is now. And having four kids, I understand that. I live near a school, and we see some of the dangers there, certainly. But it is unbelievable how disconnected our society is. And so we've never been more connected with technology and things like that. We've never had less conversation with those right around us, including you know, our spouses and our kids with technology. I think that is certainly a danger these days. And I think the last thing is just we're all busy, and we're driving around town, and we believe the lie that we have to let our kids do everything that they want to do, and we're bad parents if we don't. And so we believe some of those things. We fight those same things as well. And so we're kind of trying to bring front porch culture back in our neighborhood, which is, you know, we brought our grill out to the front again. We created a little you know, cafe table outside, just something simple. We can sit there and read a book and talk with people as they walk their dogs past instead of being in the backyard for cookouts. What if we just kind of brought that up front? And so we talk about making a scene for Jesus in the neighborhood. What is it like to make a scene? Small, big, maybe that's conversation, maybe that's coffee on the corner, but just finding small ways to draw people out of their house into their community because they are hungry.
Mm. And they may not be necessarily hungry to know. You might not want to hit them right away with, well, you can because you're a pastor, with your faith. But you say that it's just in developing relationships that people will want to know about you. And then naturally your discussions may turn to, well, why do you act the way that you do? Why did you put your grill in the front of your yard? Why do you care about getting to know us? That those questions, even though they don't ask them verbally, they may be thinking in the back of their head, hey, what makes this family a little bit different from the family who lived here before? And what can we learn from them? Is that kind of naturally the organic way that you'd like conversations to take place if you're doing what you believe is God called you to do?
Sure, that seems to be the natural. And if we're missionaries and we think about what would a missionary do as a posture of life and eating, food, conversation, dress, if they went to another country, it's not that different. The principles are still there. When we move into our neighborhood, we're trying to learn what's the culture been here and what's the language and what do people talk about? What do they celebrate? Do they eat together? If so, what do they like to gather over? Is it football in this culture? Is it outside things? Do they love little kids? Do they love dogs? And so we start to see those things. With the school parents, we realize every single school parent wants to talk about their kids and is really tired. And so we thought, what about caffeine and conversation? So that sounds great. So we started what's called Free Coffee Friday. We're out there today. It's spitting rain and it's chilly, but we had about 17 folks out on the corner. Many of them have gathered now for the last 4 years and have become friends. And we have some neighbors who are 80. We have my little kids who, you know, don't have to go off to school yet, right around the school time with parents. And it's been amazing. We've had tears together. We've had lots of laughs. And those folks have genuinely become good friends. And so it can start with something small, which is one little thing that we're going to meet in conversation. But what we've realized is that first initial opportunity is not your main opportunity. We're not in this for coffee. I love coffee. I love conversation. But I'm in it because these people's lives lack freedom. They need to know the Jesus that I know. But that takes time. People are skeptical. And it's amazing how responsive people are, though, to the gospel when you show them love tangibly and consistently.
It just reminds me of, you know, when I did go to another state and live in a different area for quite some time, and my focus was to be working for the church and getting to know kids. And when you go on a mission trip, it seems like you're doing that very fast paced. You're trying to get to know them in very quickly so that you can share the gospel with them. But when you live in a community for an extended amount of time, then you can kind of take your time. And I mean, I would take kids to eat pizza. I don't even like pizza, but I took kids to eat pizza because that's what they wanted to do. We went to football games because that's what they want to do. We went for walks or played football in the park because that's what they wanted to do. And it was just such a great way to get to know them. And the conversations about Christ came much, much later.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, again, a little different for me because I'm a pastor. It's a profession's a pretty big deal, especially when you are a male and you're talking to other guys. We don't necessarily know how to go real deep real quick, so job tends to come up. And to me, I feel like it's a good opportunity for people to be perplexed just a little bit. They expect cloistered Christian community. They expect you driving in and out just to go to church and give them a wave on Sunday morning. And so I think most times people are just curious, going, this doesn't add up to my experience and what I typically think about. And so that's fun to engage those conversations later when they say, I had no idea what to think when I heard you were a pastor. That's all right. We're a little weird sometimes. I get it. And so just to laugh and have those conversations has brought actually a lot of fruit.
I'm talking to author Alan Briggs today about his book, Staying is the New Going. The tagline is choosing to love where God places you. So where has God placed you where you're choosing to stay and put down some roots so you can get to know the people so that they can get to know you and get to know your Savior as well? We'd love to hear from you if you want to chime in on the conversation. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And also, if you have a question or a concern or something that you want to chat with us about, you can do it online. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you can submit your question there. I'll try to ask it online. We will be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Talking to author Alan Briggs today on the concept of staying rather than going. How do we blend simple principles of staying and getting to know people so that they can hear and see who Jesus is versus going to other places to do the same thing? How are you putting down roots in your own community? So, Alan, one of the things that you mentioned, you tell kind of a lot of personal stories about how people have done this. What has been a way that someone has kind of put roots down in their own community that you've seen to bear a lot of fruit or has been really effective?
Yeah, I tell some stories in the book, and one of those is, one of my favorites is a gal named Katie, and she and two of her friends, who were friends of mine, sat us down and said, guys, we feel called to go, but we're really going to go into a part of our city we'd never wanted to live in before. And so they intentionally relocated into a trailer park and just began to do very, very simple things there, and turned into kind of accidentally running an after-school program and taking folks to the hospital and being present in people's lives. And so that's kind of the term that we use, is faithful presence. And so those are kind of all the stories that, that I tell throughout the book, are just people being faithfully present to what God might want to do around them. And so that's a great example. Some of the churches that I'm hearing about, even since the book has been published, stories just are popping up everywhere of churches that are saying, we are committing to be a church of our neighborhood and of our part of the city, even if that means a few less people coming, even if that means more of our budget going out to resource people. Friends of ours did a block party the other night and just said, how do we get started? And two very introverted people said, we are going to take this first step. And it was amazing. They had about 25 folks come out and them just say, wow, thank you for doing this. This is something we want to do, but nobody will take the first step. And so for everybody, your next step is different. Your first step maybe into this. And so we just ask people to pray about, what does faithful presence look like for you in the unique place that you live with coworkers? Folks taking their coworkers out to lunch faithfully every Wednesday, they're going to treat to Chipotle, maybe to a new person or a few people. So it can be really, really simple ways to just be faithfully present to those you already know in relationships around you. And it's been pretty fun to hear all the fruit from that.
You know, I think I was thinking about that, well, because I was reading this book, obviously, but I was thinking about that standing in line to get a sandwich, because there were several people who are standing in line, don't know each other. They're just looking at their phone, checking their email, whatever it is they're doing. And then I put my phone away and just talked to the person next to me. And I found I got to have a 15-minute conversation with someone who I didn't know. And I'm a raging introvert, so this was really hard for me. But you challenged me. And I thought, what if we actually did, what if I did that every day? How many new people would I meet or get to know or laugh with for that awkward time that you have to be standing in line waiting for your food?
Yep, absolutely. I think if we believe that it's something that's so hard that we can't do it, then we're not going to get anywhere. But if we say we're given a command by Jesus to love our neighbors, and I think to ask that dangerous question, what if we're supposed to love our actual neighbors? What if we're supposed to love those I'm right next to in line? It gets a little uncomfortable, you're right, and it can be awkward at first, but man, it's amazing. After that first second of talking, the first conversation, the fruit that comes from it usually comes quicker than I had imagined, actually.
Hmm. Yes, probably. Maybe I'll see that guy tomorrow when I get a sandwich again.
You never know. Or maybe you'll talk to the guy tomorrow and go, it worked yesterday. Maybe it'll work again tomorrow.
Yes. Well, one of the things, one of the terms you use in your book is called an incarnational ministry, and that we need to kind of pique our awareness to understand what that is. Talk about what that is and where does the word come from?
Yeah, so obviously Jesus is the primo example of what incarnational means, in the flesh. And I love how the Message translation of the Bible, the Message version, in John 1:14, it said, the Word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood. And that has been deeply challenging to me, to say, what if we intentionally not just moved our stuff in, but placed our hearts on a platter in the neighborhood and said, God, use me in the beauty and the brokenness, however you'd like. And I think that that incarnational piece is key. I mean, we've had a few people come up to gatherings that we've been doing. We've literally had people come up to kick us off of the corner and say, what are you guys doing here? You're not allowed to be here. And all I do is point to my house and say, I live right there. And nobody has ever proceeded with that. In fact, the cops, the district officials, whatever, will stay and have coffee with us because we all trust people who are in the trenches. And I think that's a key to ministry, is the farther we go out of our comfort zone. God does amazing things, and I'm certainly not against global missions at all. But I just think we have most credibility when we are closest to home. And so we say that the gospel makes most sense in proximity. It just makes sense. I live next door. Hey, I threw out a hard question for you. Let's talk about it tomorrow. There's not a rush. I'm not getting on a plane. I'll still be here tomorrow and a year from here to be able to have that hard conversation.
Well, and global missions sometimes are just a wonderful spark because you are in a different arena. You're in this different environment. And because you know that they know why you're there, you seem to be a little bit more bold in the things that you talk about. And like I said, you kind of go at a faster speed. And then you come to this realization that people want to know you and people want to know about Jesus. And you can bring that knowledge right back to where you are and then realize, wait a minute. There's people here, too, and they might want to know me, and they might want to know about Jesus, too, and then have the courage and the skills to actually be able to have those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it can be a great spark. Again, the same principles that you would use in the middle of Africa for missions, you would use in the middle of Europe for missions, you use in the middle of my neighborhood, because people are people. We all have cracks and needs, and it just takes a while to figure out what those are. And so we certainly believe in both and we believe there's, you know, I think a smarter way to do global missions than I think we have it at times accidentally maybe treating it as kind of a form of spiritual tourism. We need to be careful about that, certainly. But personally, the church that I'm part of and the church plants that I'm part of are entering into a global partnership that's going to be long-term and consistent, where we can work with leaders who are on the ground to meet those needs. That's how I would want to be dealt with. That's how I would want to be as a local indigenous leader here, you know, talk to and in relationship with. So I think just to kind of rethink our paradigms of how we've done this in a more and more secular world, more and more skeptical world, and let's be honest, there's possibility in that. There's fear in that, but there's great gospel possibilities right now. This could be the church's finest hour in North America.
Hmm. Well, I wrote down a helpful incarnational mantra is, do what you can with what you've been giving, where you've been given it. Do you find that you're having that conversation a lot with the people who are wanting to do something?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a revival of place going on. I think everywhere where people are saying, wait a minute, I want to make Duluth great. I don't just want to move somewhere else. I want to make this neighborhood of Minneapolis great. I want to make this spot, Des Moines or wherever it might be, a great space. And I'm hearing stories from people whose hearts are broken because they weren't able to go back onto the mission field and they've had medical issues in their family and they accidentally ended up back there. And then suddenly this book, I think with the nudging from the Holy Spirit, has said, hey, guess what? I know that you are going to be there. That's not a surprise to God that you live in your neighborhood, that you work in your job, that you know all those lost people. And so I want to use you there. And so I think the ultimate trust, Joe, is in, do we trust the sovereignty of God? And often I think our wanderlust culture says on Instagram, you can look at the most beautiful picture somewhere else and somebody else has got it going on in this place or that place. You'd be better off if you were here or there, but no. We need to be content and faithfully present right where we're at.
Talking to Alan Briggs today and on his new book and new concept, Staying is the New Going. Can you grow where you're planted in a way that you are sharing Christ with other people just by being where you are? We'll talk more about that when we come back for the second half hour of Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm talking to author Alan Briggs today on Staying is the New Going. Maybe you've had a desire to travel somewhere to communicate the gospel to people who don't yet know it. Well, Alan's kind of challenging us and reminding us that God's mission doesn't need a passport. You can be a missionary right here in your own homes, in your own neighborhoods, in your own churches. And what does that look like? We're going to chat with him a little bit more about it. But if you're listening and you would like to learn more about this, well, Alan and his publisher have been extremely generous and donated a few copies to give away. If you'd like to get your hands on one of those for either yourself or maybe someone who's in pastoral ministry that you know, it would be a great book to get for them. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Or perhaps you have a great story you'd like to share of how this has worked for you, staying and kind of planting those roots where you are right now. You can also chat with us about that. We'd love to hear from you. So, Alan, one of the what I wanted to do is kind of look at what are some actual ways, some steps that people could make to be intentional about communicating with others so that they can get to know you and eventually get to know the gospel. What are some great ways to start?
Yeah, I think taking advantage of those times when people are open for community is probably the easiest way to start. I think the summers, people are open to the block party idea. When we said we were new to the neighborhood, hey, we're the young guys, we're going to take a risk. I know you guys have been on the block a long time. And I said, hey, guys, welcome to our, you know, first block party here. Have you guys done this before? And an old guy said, yeah, we used to do this every year. And he said, our last one was 34 years ago.
Oh,
I can't even comprehend, number one, what makes you stop doing it. But number two, how you even remember that. That was a special thing. He knew when the last one was. And so that's pretty normal, I'd say, that we remember things from growing up, and yet we want to reawaken that. But you just need somebody to take the charge and do that. So block parties can be great. Anything with a bouncy house, and kids are just drawn to it. And if my kids are drawn to it, I'm drawn to it. And so anything that kids can be drawn to, sports are a great way to be a coach on your sports team. I got a friend who entered our town as a church planter, and he went to the YMCA and said, whenever you need a coach, I'm in. And whenever his kids are playing, he's either coaching or assistant coaching. You can be the team mom. Whatever simple ways that you can host and through sports are great. I've got a friend that does soup nights, and he says, hey, bring your favorite soup recipe as it starts getting chilly. Obviously, people aren't hanging outside as much. Halloween has been a great one. We take that as the last opportunity really before winter. We say that's the last time we're going to see our neighbors outside until spring. And so we take advantage of that. We get a fire pit outside. We've made some cider before and had hot cider there, homemade hot cider for tastings actually from the trees in the neighborhood. And just any ways that you can uniquely draw people out of their home to hang out for a while. For guys, you know, often the guys in my neighborhood are pretty rough around the edges. And they'll come to a poker night or something like that, but they will not come to a regular dinner at somebody's house. And that's been pretty fun to have times where I say, hey, come on over to the man cave and let's have some conversation and then let's play some poker. And then they kind of feel at ease. And so I would say anything that you can make a regular tradition that's a big deal. Football on Sunday afternoons was a huge win for us and our friends that would invite our family over. We'd bring food over together and we'd hang for 3 or 4 hours and watch the Broncos games and just have a great time interacting with this family over football, food, fun. So create some traditions, make it regular, keep doing it, and look to advance the conversation a little bit more as you hear more cracks in their lives.
So, Alan, we have someone who's calling in who wants to share something that's been working in their neighborhood as well. Susan, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Well, what is it that's happening in your community that you'd like to share?
Well, about 20 years ago, one of the churches in Wahpeton, North Dakota, a handful of people got together and wanted to start a Christmas meal for anybody who didn't have any place to go at Christmas or whoever wanted to come was welcome. And it started off the first couple of years with a handful of people, and now it's several hundred people every year. And a lot of times it's the same people that keep coming back, and it's been a great way to meet people, and it's also done something really nice for increasing the church membership as well.
Wow, that's a beautiful story. I love it.
Thanks for sharing, Susan. You'll get a copy of Alan's book. Yep. If you're doing something in your community, you want to share it, something that's working really well, we'd love to hear that as well. Alan, so that's a great intentional step to start in your neighborhood. What about starting something intentional with your job?
Yeah, I think the lunch hour seems to be something that People used to spend a lot of time over food, over lunch, but a lot of people are working through their lunch these days in our busy culture. And so I think taking advantage of lunch hour can be huge, or perhaps even a happy hour, something right afterwards, where before you go home to, you know, kids and maybe the responsibility of the evening, could you go do something together with folks? And often people will share things off the cuff at the water cooler at work that can be pretty deep stuff that really they're inviting you to follow up a little deeper on. And so have heard just some cool stories from friends of mine who continue to follow up with their coworkers and ask them personal questions based on just a little something that they threw out. The family's kind of struggling right now. And then to say, hey, would you like to talk about that? I'd love to hear more about what you're actually talking about. And so often we find water cooler conversations, go to happy hour conversations, go to deeper, maybe dinner conversations. Take a risk. Invite a new couple or friend over who just started the job and just welcome them into the job. Hey, can I help you at all? What questions do you have here? Instead of the cold shoulder we often give at work, can just be that inviting, friendly presence to kind of open the door the first day of work.
Well, and I know it's so tempting at work, especially because it's kind of go, 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 get everything done. And that hour is so nice to have to just kind of decompress a little bit, and at least for me. And yet I found that when I actually make appointments to go have lunch with people or even just sit in the lunchroom, that it changed my entire day because it was a different focus. It was a good focus. It helped me get to know other people. And that really helped make work much more enjoyable. So I didn't get as much done, but I got other things done.
Absolutely. And maybe set a tradition. If it's not regular, then it's really hard for it to see long-term impact. And so maybe Wednesday is that day that you sacrifice your lunch. Just one day a week that you say, I'm going to buy lunch for somebody else. I have Chipotle ministry, or I have, you know, Wendy's ministry, or whatever that looks like, that you are going to go budget a little time and a little money to treat somebody else to lunch.
Well, Alan, we have another caller calling in from Coon Rapids to share something that's going on in their community and ask a question as well. Tyler, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question for Alan?
Hey, well, first, I want to thank you for just for what you're doing and for sharing all of this. Actually, recently, the Lord had laid it on my heart that, you know, hometown is the place to be, and that there are plenty of opportunities for mission locally rather than going elsewhere. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. The question is,
I had been living within Minneapolis for some time and found it very easy to engage with the local neighborhoods. People were on the streets. You know, they didn't seem to be as busy, and found evangelism much easier then. However, when I moved out to more well-to-do neighborhoods, it almost seemed like there were bubbles that people lived within, and have found it difficult to not burst their bubbles, but be allowed in to their own private space. So wondering if you had any advice on how to connect with people when they seem to have a separate life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it tends to be harder in neighborhoods that have a little bit more wealth, and disconnection maybe seems to be a little bit more prominent. But here's something that I would just say to encourage you, Tyler, is I would say this phrase, and I say it in the book, take comfort, the bar is low. And so if you do something little, then in an area where connection is not normal, it actually goes above and beyond and makes them notice. And so if somebody's moving in on moving day, you go, okay, this is key. Even if I can just take in a few loads, how can I help when I can? And so it might not be the culture that you were used to growing up with, you know, you take bread over to the neighbors when they're new. But just to be able to, somebody's out, you know, working in their garage, that's a sign for me that I go over and we have man talk and just say, hey, you know, what's going on? I know fences are very prominent and very, very hard. People drive straight into their driveways. So you do need to work a little bit harder, I would say, to try to find something. A friend of mine in a very nice neighborhood is doing the football thing, and they're doing appetizers, and their family understands, hey, this is something that we just need to work a little bit harder at. But in general, our living rooms and backyards are private space, And so how can we bring a little bit more of that scene outside? And so Halloween might be one. There's a neighborhood that people do it up big for Halloween. They do joint yard sales together and say, hey, one time a year we're going to organize this yard sale. And you have a whole 2 days with each other. You have time to help each other. You're promoting together. So those are a couple ideas that I've heard. And I would say pray a lot, because the Holy Spirit is with us and has charged us to be salt and light. And so God is with us on this journey in that. And it can be scary, but certainly I know what you're talking about. And privacy is American ideal, and it is firmly intact in suburbia. But I'm hearing this from a lot of folks. You're not alone, Tyler, and obviously the Spirit is with you.
Tyler, thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I think that's something a lot of people are experiencing in many neighborhoods across the metro area for sure, but in many suburban areas as well. So thanks for sharing. You know, one thing, Alan, that you wrote was that every once in a while, if you're having trouble figuring out a small or regular idea somewhere to get started, that every once in a while, a crazy or simple idea might work. And you used the example of a basement concert series. Talk more about that and how that could be successful.
Yeah, we found that there's a lack of kind of small to mid-sized venues for artists to get started in our town. And so they were looking for coffee shops to play in and said, hey, we've got a basement and we've done some of these outdoors as well. We've incorporated music. It's something that people love to come around, and people respect good music. And so we just feel like it's one particular way. In fact, we've had an 80s cover band play at our last block party, and people said, did the neighbors call the cops because of all the noise? And I said, no, all the neighbors were out in their lawn chairs enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And so I think music can be a huge thing. We had no idea whether that was going to work, and that's actually turned into something that we raise quite a bit of money at those, and we give to a local cause. We give to a mom that's just having a hard time. She's a single mom and has a special needs daughter, and we were able to give her about $500 after that. And we found that a lot of people who don't know Jesus, they want to be involved in these projects, but because they're not involved in local churches, they just don't know how to serve their community and touch others. So we want to give people a chance to do that. And strangely enough, music is our first step in how we do that.
You know, you brought up an interesting point that sometimes people aren't part of a local church, and so they're not sure how to get involved. But the local church can also be an organization that's kind of subtly or not subtly also kind of growing roots and staying where they're planted and getting to know people in the community. How do you feel the church can best do that?
Yeah, I think we have to remember that the church is the people. And so there are often times where people are driving, you know, 15 and 20 minutes and 30 minutes to church. And so your individual parish is not the same as maybe your whole family parish. And that's okay. And what we realize is I can be on mission with my family, but my daughter goes on mission into her school in a different way that I go on mission during the day with my friend Matt, who doesn't know Jesus yet. So in the same sense, we believe a church family has to sort of divide and conquer their city in many ways, divide and be faithfully present. And so there are times when that won't add up to the exact place that your church parish is located, but realizing that we are the church, the sent people of God, to where we're going, and there are ways that has been able to tie in to our, you know, actual physical church. There are other ways that we go as a representative of our church into a neighborhood, and so we've been able to leverage some resources as well. We've been able to bring some money from our church outreach budget into starting a garden at the school about 100 feet away from my house, and so the elementary school garden and our church was a sponsor of that, as well as a couple other churches. And so I think it's looking for places of overlap, and I also think it's being okay that there are going to be times that this is just the mission of your family, and you are quietly supported by your church family in doing that. So there's some of both, certainly.
One of the things I remember finding with this church I worked for in a different state of mine is I was charged with raising some money for this youth group to be able to go on a camp. And so I had all these great ideas for them of how we were to raise money. And the kids kept saying, no. Instead, we just have to do this. We just have to have a barbecue or whatever. And I'm like, that'll never work, because I was in my own head thinking about what had worked in my own community in the past. But for their community, that was the ticket. And so it was great to listen to their idea and say, all right, well, let's just do it. Let's see. God has obviously put this in your heart. Let's see what he does with this if we just open up that door a little bit. And it was wildly successful, but I never would have thought to do that on my own. And so sometimes it's different for every community. And how are we going to know that unless we immerse ourselves in that community?
Absolutely. And I think if there are any church leaders listening right now, because I'm both a neighbor and a church leader in this sense, I would say listen to the ideas of your people, mm-hmm. and when possible, try to resource them. You know, there's a couple that said, hey, we're going to do a block party. And without thinking, I said, hey, we can get you $50. And just to help them, just to say, hey, we're behind you, but can we get you tables? Can we get you the grill from our church? I mean, what do you guys need? I think we have some extra hot dogs. And I mean, just however we as a church and as pastors, as leaders can say, man, we love you. We're behind you. If you can just show up and just, you know, play some lawn golf with people, talk with their neighbors, it's incredibly affirming of their personal ministry to go into their own neighborhoods.
I'm talking to Alan Briggs today about his book, Staying is the New Going, Choosing to Love Where God Places You. And we're just talking about what it means to set down roots, what it means to just grow along with your neighborhood, grow where God has planted you. And also, we'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can certainly go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. If you have a question or comment, you can submit it that way, and we will get that on the air as well. We're coming back with Alan Briggs in just a bit on Connecting Faith. Well, how are you diving in your own community? Talking to Alan Briggs today about his book, Staying is the New Going. How can you be, of course, a disciple on who God has made you to be right where you are? Is the gospel something that we outsource to overseas missionaries, or is it something we can do right here in our own neighborhoods? Well, some challenging questions that Alan Briggs is just helping us to answer today. And Alan, we're getting all sorts of people who are submitting their stories in. One, Jan from Burnsville, says she had an open house in her neighborhood 13 years later, and now they're doing dinners as well. It's brought the community together. Another man, Dick, said, I was in the military for the last 55 years, and now we continue to get together. The people who I'm not reading that correctly, Dick, but it looks like you're still getting together with those people, and that's been a great experience for you. So, Ellen, what I was reading about in Jeremiah just kind of encouraged me that this isn't just some crazy concept, that the Lord wants us to put down roots where we are planted. And I'm just going to read Jeremiah 29, 4 through 7, because you've put it in your book and talked about it so eloquently. So I'd love to allow you to do that here as well. It says, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I'm sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters and wives for your son, and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear their own sons and daughters, multiply there, and do not decrease, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for it is in its welfare that you will find your welfare. Talk more about why that verse has kind of inspired you to continue this concept.
Well, more and more we feel like exiles as followers of Jesus in our culture, and I think it's easy to, you know, read articles on Facebook and think, man, we're going to hell in a handbasket. What is happening? And certainly there are some concerning things. But again, if we believe that this was spoken to the exiles who clearly had not planned on giving up their rights and living in another land, that we can do that as well. And so I literally, when I drive home, I drive right past a sex shop and a pot shop. So welcome to Colorado, right? And I drive right past that amongst some fast food and other things and think the need is real. The need is real right here in front of us. And so if we can just be known as people who love our city or the biggest fans of the school in our neighborhood, saying, how can we help? If our churches can be known as ones that say we want to make a dent in the issues in our community. And foster care has been a huge one for us here in our place. We say we love our city and we love the people here. And I just think that it's a posture. It's a posture to say, okay, God, we realize that there are broken and cracked things in this world, but we want to be part of that process of partnering with God to mend things. I mean, that, whether you love Jesus or not, I don't know many people that don't want to get behind that message. And so that's given us just a lot of courage to think about this ancient message that was sent. I also think about Paul and his time in Ephesus, where he stayed. And because he stayed in Ephesus for a few years, it says that the whole region heard the word of the Lord. So sorry about that. I am preaching. I get excited. But often staying is actually the most strategic thing that we can do in advancing the gospel, and certainly loving our place. And let's not forget prayer. Pray for our place to advance, to become more godly, to become blessed in many senses, not just financially.
Well, and a lot of people may listen and say, hey, I am no one special. I have no special training. I couldn't articulate my faith if you paid me to. And so they're maybe intimidated to have conversations. But everyone has a story that they could be able to tell someone if they asked. So talk a little bit about why someone shouldn't be intimidated just to get to know people in a way that would help them get to know Jesus a little better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, I mean, not to be old school, but I want to go back to who Jesus tells us we are, and that is we are the salt of the earth, and we are a city on a hill. And so if we believe that, that's actually an identity statement. That's not about anything we do. That's not about the knowledge that we have. That's not about whether we're a pastor or not. And actually, you guys listening have a way better chance to impact people than I do, because I'm a pastor. That's two strikes, maybe three strikes against me in some communities. And yet, if you have a normal job, my friend G, he's my mechanic, he's an incredible guy, but Guillermo gets to talk to literally hundreds of people a day who are having financial problems, who are frustrated at life, and he gets to shine salt and light on them. And he has recently come to know Jesus, and it's been amazing to watch God use him. So I think that the identity that God has given us in Ephesians 2:10, we know that we're his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus, and he has good works for all of us to do. So he already has good works for you to do. The question is what and who and the details in between there. But if we believe that we're actually supposed to be and can be the salty and luminous people that Jesus called us to be, then that's most of it right there. And then just to be obedient to however he wants to use us. But please don't think that you have to do more or learn more to serve God. Dig in right now and put him at his word, that you could actually be salty and luminous if you just follow Jesus in the place that you're at.
I want to be luminous. I love that word. I love that challenge. Alan, you know, we only have about a minute and a half left of our show, but I would love if you would just pray for those who are listening today who are still a little on the fence and thinking, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be salt and light in my neighborhood. If you could just specifically pray for them, I'd love to have you do so.
I would love to. God, we thank you that you actually are not telling us to go do more. You're not telling us to be missional Pharisees and just do this checklist and that checklist, and then we will be holy, but that we are already your kids and you love us so much. And so, God, I thank you that as your kids, we go out as representatives of the family, and we say, hey, you have a father who loves you. And God, I pray not for a message today of shame or guilt of what we haven't done, but of great opportunity, that you don't need us, God, but you choose to use us in your great plan. So God, pray for every person listening today that they would realize that, yes, you have called us salt and light, and we can indeed live our lives in simple ways and be that, from the soccer mom to the mathlete to the businessman, and yes, it's so simple that even a pastor can do it. And so I pray for your strength today to do that as well, God. Amen.
Well, Alan, thanks so much for joining us today and just for challenging us and giving us the courage to kind of step out where we already are in telling people not only who Jesus is, but just getting to know them in their own community. And I just also just encourage you and challenge you to take this opportunity this weekend to try one thing different, have one conversation you may not have, turn your phone off while you're standing in line, or whatever it takes to give God a chance to work through you. Alan, thanks so much for joining us, and I just wish you, of course, the best of luck with this book, and also just wish you many blessings on your church in Colorado.
Thanks, Joe. It's been an honor.
Thank you, and thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. If you just caught part of this program and you want to go back and hear the whole thing, you can do so at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, and you can have access to all the podcasts for our show. There's many others to listen to as well. Thanks again for joining us on Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Have a great afternoon.